Tech and Talk Radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle, and today I'm speaking with Tara Robertson. Tara is an intersectional feminist who uses data and research to advocate for equality and inclusion. Currently working as the diversity and inclusion lead for Mozilla, she has more than 10 years' experience making open source and tech communities more diverse and welcoming. Her core values are social justice, collaboration, and all things open. Open source, open access, and open education. Her curiosity and delight in connecting people come together in person and online, where she can often be found asking good questions. As a librarian with 5 years leading accessibility work in higher education, she brings practical expertise of how universal design can be used to include people with disabilities and enhance access for everyone. Tara has a Master's of Library and Information Studies from the University of British Columbia. Welcome to the podcast, Tara.
Thanks, Danielle.
Why don't we start with you telling us a bit about all of your days? What are they like?
They're really varied. The thing that I like the most about my job is that the tasks that I do and the topics that I cover are super wide ranging. So I am a big Excel nerd and I get to do a bunch of data work and work with a dashboard to look at our diversity data. I get to coach people one-on-one. I get to design and run workshops to help improve our culture to be more inclusive. And like the topics that I get to cover are like women in tech, like thinking about promotions, thinking about de-biasing the hiring process, improving accessibility, both in our products and kind of how we work as a company, and advocating for transgender inclusion.
Amazing. Is there anything you don't get to do in EDI? That's a lot.
Pretty varied. That's what I love about my job the most.
Yeah. So do you mostly work in an office, on a laptop at home? What's your environment like?
I am massively extroverted. So I work most days from the Vancouver office, but 48% of the Mozilla workforce is remote. So we're set up to work well kind of from anywhere. So usually Fridays I'll work from home. And if I'm on the road, I'll work from other offices.
Yeah. And do you find that the remote work factor is a big part of why Mozilla is welcoming to people of diverse backgrounds or accessibility needs?
I think it's part of it for sure. It enables us to hire the best people no matter where they are. Not all the smartest people are in Silicon Valley, that's
no
for sure.
Way.
And like some people who have families or roots in different places or have caregiving responsibilities, I think that remote work culture enables people to be flexible about how they show up and get their work done.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. How did you end up with this current position?
People are like, how did you go from being a librarian to working in HR and tech? I'm like, yeah, that was an odd path. In libraries, I did a lot of technology work. So I was working on some open source software in libraries and working in library technology communities and realizing that it was the same kind of voices speaking at conferences. So working to make the keynotes and conference programs a lot more diverse, instead of just the usual suspects talking about the usual things, like encouraging other people and mentoring other people to get up on stage and do talks, as well as putting codes of conduct in place.
Absolutely.
So I think that's like, it's totally a normal thing now and kind of expected for conferences to have a code of conduct. But like 5 to 8 years ago, people were saying like, is this really necessary? So it was kind of having those conversations with people in the community to bring them along and then doing the work of helping write the code of conduct and the enforcement mechanism.
Awesome. And what drew you to Mozilla?
I've been a huge fan of Mozilla for a long time, like for so many reasons. Mozilla is a company that fights to keep the internet open and accessible for all. That's our mission. And the way we do that is through products. So products like the Firefox web browser, Firefox Monitor, which is a service you can use to see if your account, your email account has been compromised in a data breach. And awesome products like Pocket, which enables you to save long form articles to read at your leisure later. Like, Mozilla is a tech company that's really values and mission driven and works in the open, and I'm all about that. To be able to fully enjoy the internet, people need to feel safe, and they need to feel like their privacy is respected, and they need to control their experience online. And for me, these are very feminist concepts. People love technology, and technology needs to love them back. With Firefox, I think we're giving power back to users, no matter what device they're using and wherever they are in the world. Like, while Apple products only protect those who have the financial means to buy them, and Google buries their privacy settings under layers of menu options and clicks, with Firefox, we give control back to users, whatever device they're using. And I think that's really, really central to a healthy internet.
Absolutely. I think security and controlling your data on the internet is such an empowering thing to give people. Yeah, that's a great mission. So were there any key events or people that helped lead you to where you are now?
It's interesting. I wasn't looking for a job when I applied for this job, but three different people who I admire a lot, who are in different industries, sent me the job posting, and they're like, this is you. You need to apply for this. And I had a ton of imposter syndrome. I was like, I'm a librarian working at Langara College in Vancouver, a really awesome teaching college, but not one that's really that famous. So I was like, why would a tech company hire me? And as I went through the interview process, I had imposter syndrome at each and every step. And there was something really cool in the job posting that said, you know, we value people who work in, who have experience working in the open. That could be an open office collaboration or a collaboration in your lab, or it could be formal experience on an open source software project. So when I saw that, I was like, And then there was another sentence that was, we encourage you to apply even though you don't check all the boxes. And I was like, oh,
that's helpful.
Yeah. And I was realizing that the job description was crafted carefully with inclusion in mind. So I was like, like, even though my experiences as a librarian, if I connect the dots, they're going to take me seriously as a candidate.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome to hear.
It was a good experience.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I have the same imposter syndrome all the time looking at jobs. It's terrible, but you can really tell which job postings were crafted to really appeal to a lot of people, as opposed to which ones were just put up same text it was 5 years ago when they hired the first time. And that's one of the things we really recommend to employers, is really look at how you're hiring. So what has been one of the most memorable moments from your career so far?
Wow. So I mentioned that 48% of our workforce works remote. We have twice yearly all hands meetings where the whole company and about 100 of our key volunteers come together to spend a week together working. And I think it's really important to have that face-to-face time together to build those connections that allow you to build trust and work effectively together.
Yeah.
So the location of all hands moves around, and last week we were all in Whistler together.
Oh, that's great. I'm sure it was beautiful.
It was amazing. And I think in Canada, especially in Vancouver, it would be unheard of to have such a big gathering without acknowledging First Nations land and without framing the meeting with that context. So I suggested we do this, and I was really excited when the event organizer said, yeah, that seems good. A couple weeks later, she messaged back and said, okay, do you want to do it? And I said, yep, this is an amazing opportunity. I want to do this, and I want to do a really good job. And it was, yeah, I put a lot of thought into it and like broke down in tears a couple of times because I wanted to be able to frame this to a global audience of people I really care about. I wanted to be respectful of the Squamish and Lillooet nations. I wanted to do a good job for myself, like I'm standing up in front of my whole company and for the teams I'm part of. So I think I put a lot of pressure on myself, but it was really important to me that I did a really good job. And I was the first person to speak at the first plenary before our CEO, before our chairwoman. I got up and I introduced myself, told people a little bit about where I'm from and why stories are important, and encouraged everyone to like listen to each other's stories while we're here that week. And then I had the immense pleasure of introducing Alex Wells, who's a 3-time world champion hoop dancer from Mount Currie.
And amazing.
Yeah, he came on stage along with a live drummer and singer and really blew us all away. Something really, really magical happened. And yeah, I think it was a really awesome start to a really good week.
That sounds great. It's so nice when you get to get something in your work that you really care about and you really get to throw everything at it and make sure it's done right. So that must have been really satisfying.
Yeah. And like while it was me up on stage, like I just kept thinking, oh, don't mess it up. I love that I work in an environment where there's lots of subject matter experts who partner with each other. So one of the people who helped me hone the story I told has done a TED Talk. My boss, the chief people officer, and the chief marketing officer both offered to coach me in speaking.
That's amazing.
I got chance at a dress rehearsal to stand up on stage and do it, and people gave me really honest feedback.
That's like, great.
It's so cool to work with amazing people, and like when we work together and support each other, it's pretty awesome the things we can accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the honest feedback and getting to try things and maybe flub a little bit, but people don't just go, good job. But they're like, hey, this is what'll take it to the next level.
Yeah, that's they're great. Like, maybe you need to like walk to the middle of the stage and plant your feet and really be there. Like, okay.
Which can be really scary if you haven't been on stage a lot with a microphone in your face, facing a bunch of people. How many people?
I was about 1,100. So that's the most people I've ever spoken in front of.
Yeah, that's a very large gathering and all people that you care about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like having your 1,100 parents in the audience.
Yeesh.
So what inspired you to pursue a career in STEM?
In high school, I took a lot of math and science courses, and I really wanted to be an engineer, mostly because I love the creative problem solving that engineers do, but also because like I knew that there weren't a lot of women in engineering, and I was like, ha, I'm going to prove them wrong.
Nice.
but that's not the path I took at all. My undergrad's in international studies and a minor in women's studies. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I lived in a bunch of different countries. I thought I wanted to work for the Foreign Service. I think I had an overly romantic idea of what that would look like. I watched too many James Bond movies. Instead of evening dresses and little guns, it was bilingual legal paperwork.
Yes, indeed.
So I was a librarian. I was really passionate about that. And it's kind of cool that I'm work for an engineering organization now, not as an engineer, but as someone who's trying to change the culture and change the systems to make sure that there's more women and other underrepresented folks in our company.
That's awesome. Was there like a person in your life that really encouraged you into those math and science classes along the way?
I was and I am really competitive in some ways. And I liked that there was an answer and like you could find an answer. I also was in an IB class and we were all super nerdy and delighting in kind of learning more and learning together. Mm-hmm. I think that was a real big thing that it was okay and like socially acceptable to really be excited about learning.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you feel like you get to use that passion for creative problem solving in your work now?
Definitely. Like, I think both diversity and inclusion and keeping the internet open and accessible and trying to make a healthy internet, like, those are emergent problems. Nobody has solved them.
Indeed.
So we have to use the data that we've got to make hypotheses, make our best guess on interventions and changes, see if it moves the needle. And if those things are working, do more of them. And if they're not working, we need to figure out the next thing. So I love that. Like, yeah. They're not easy problems.
Yeah, that's always fun to tackle.
Sometimes at work, someone's like, oh, this is such a wicked problem. I'm like, yeah, but if it was easy, you'd be bored and you wouldn't like that.
Yeah. How long would it take if it was easy?
Yeah. And I don't ever feel bored.
That's good. It's a good place to be. So what was your university experience like? How did that help to shape where you went?
I'm thinking about grad school now because that was my most recent experience. I graduated with my master's in 2007, I think. It wasn't the best experience, but I knew that to work in the field, I needed that degree. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting working in tech now because in debiasing the hiring process, we're looking at people's ability, not the school they went to or the degrees that they have. Mm-hmm. Like if someone went to a code academy or is self-taught or learned through contributions to an open source software project and can like get the same results as someone who went to Stanford, MIT, or University of Waterloo, you could conclude that in some ways they could be smarter because they learned all that outside a system mm-hmm. on their own.
Yeah. Well, and I find like code academies and stuff are really key in engaging people who want to update their skills as well in the workforce, but also people who don't necessarily have access to that 4-year university education.
Yeah. And when you ask the question, who are those people? It could be older people. It could be people who are parenting, women who have other caregiving like responsibilities. And the jobs in tech are really awesome. Like, they're interesting. They pay well. Like,
yeah,
they should be open to people who from a variety of backgrounds who can do the work.
Awesome. Do you have any tips or tricks for maybe students who are trying to get into tech?
For people who are trying to get into tech, I think it's important to remember what your own values are and to not compromise on those when you're looking for work. Sort of, it's not my experience in libraries. There was a lot of, as we were getting ready to graduate, there was a lot of well-meaning people giving well-meaning advice about dressing professionally or acting professionally. And I found that really stifling and alienating. Mm-hmm. I really love that I work in an environment now that I can wear whatever I want. Nobody looks at my pink and purple hair and has questions or makes stupid comments. Instead, I'm judged for what I bring in terms of thoughts and ideas and execution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think one of the things that helped me in my early career was finding my people. So either people who shared my values around open source or open access, or people who shared my values around feminism, and kind of having that awesome group of peers that I could like test out ideas with. We would encourage each other and like celebrate when people had successes, and we could in a safe space talk about where we failed. Mm-hmm. So I think those friends and colleagues were super important to me.
Yeah, especially that network is so important in looking out for the jobs, especially when you're not like, I need a job, but the opportunities that don't come along very often that you could easily miss because you're not looking or you don't think that it's valuable to you at that moment. Those are some of the key places where I've seen my network step up to be like, hello, here's this job. So that's really helpful to have those supports and keep yourself grounded.
It was interesting, our graduate class, because we're all interviewing for a lot of the same jobs, but we're different people. So there was a group of us that just created a Google Doc and dumped in the interview questions, and we shared it with each other. And I love that open ethos. Mm-hmm. I think some people see those kind of situations as a zero-sum game, like, you get the job and I don't. But it's like, we're different people with different skills. Like, why don't we lift each other up and why don't we share? Because it's a competitive market, but totally. Like as a group, let's help each other.
Yeah, because not everyone's going to be the fit for the same job.
Totally.
So, yeah. It's great that you guys work together that way. I don't think there's many stories like that out there.
I talked about peer mentorship, but yeah. I had some amazing mentors as well who were more senior to me, and I'm eternally grateful for them. And some of them like pulled me aside and like, I know you believe in this. Like, you need to be very careful in what you say and how you step here, because this could be career limiting. So that honest feedback, like mm-hmm. that was provided with candor, was really, really important in sort of keeping myself safe and moving forward in my career. Mm-hmm. So I think mentorship is super key, whether it's at a peer level or at like a mentor-mentee type senior-junior relationship, like yeah. super important.
Absolutely. Are there ways in which you engage in mentorship these days?
Our team at Mozilla, so the diversity and inclusion team, runs a program called Voice and Influence, which is more of a peer mentorship program where the pilot round was just women, but the next round will be open to all genders. It helps people navigate the gender dynamics in the workplace. So circles, which are small groups, are made up of people from different orgs at different levels. And each month they meet to talk about a certain article or video. Mm-hmm. And there's facilitated conversation around kind of what other people's experience is. And there's kind of two things that come out of this. One, there's like the formal curriculum where people learn about the research and they learn about the gender dynamics in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's the hidden curriculum that people develop these amazing networks
yeah.
and have each other's backs. So,
we pulled one over on you. Now you're friends.
Now you're collaborating.
Exactly. Very nice. All right. Now we're going to get just a little bit negative because life isn't all rainbows and unicorns.
What?
I know. So can you share with us a challenge that you faced in your career?
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I decided to come out as a former sex worker. The context was maybe, 10, 15 years ago, I was speaking at a union conference around LGBTQ rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke on the floor that sex workers should also have safe work environments free from harassment and bullying and those things.
Mm-hmm.
I identified myself as a library worker and a feminist. And it was really cool. In talking to some other feminists, they hadn't considered that sex work was work before. And the work that I did in talking to them throughout the week helped change their mind. And the motion passed. It was a big moment in my life. But what I didn't realize is that the Montreal Gazette was in the room. And the next morning, my name was in the paper, and I was quoted as Tara Robertson, sex worker and Vancouver public librarian.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I just felt sick. And looking back, like, I think not only was it a violation of my privacy, but I was uncomfortable with people knowing that about me because yeah. it's early in my career and people are not very sex positive and they make a lot of judgments about sex workers. And mm-hmm. I was worried that that would negatively affect me. And I had a lot of shame about it. So fast forward in time, a couple of years ago, while I was still a librarian, there was some issues of On Our Backs, which is a lesbian porn magazine that were digitized. And people thought this is amazing. And at first I thought it was really cool too. And then I was like, huh. And I checked in with some people I know who modeled in that magazine and they didn't give consent for that.
Ooh.
So much like I was worried that people would search Tara Robertson and librarian and find out my sex work history, that people would be searching for these other, like for these friends who modeled in On Our Backs and find out, oh, this person who wants to become a kindergarten teacher appeared in a lesbian porn magazine.
Yeah.
So I was able to tell my story in a way that highlighted the ethical issues in digitizing different content and having mm-hmm. stuff be available online.
Yeah.
Like, we've never been in this situation in like in media history where so much is searchable. And libraries just consider copyright generally when they make these digitization decisions. So by telling my story, I was able to bring the idea of ethics on the table and ask people, like, maybe there's situations where all the information shouldn't be available, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was successful. Like, the way I told the story and leveraged quotes from some of the models got people thinking, and the content was taken down.
That's amazing.
So I was super nervous. And I knew in the moment that, like, when I told this story, I couldn't take it back. So, like, when I got this job at Mozilla, I had the conversation before I accepted it. I said, this is my history. Is this going to be a problem? And stuff that I thought was going to be career limiting for me, it's just like, it's who I am. Like, take it or leave it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I feel a lot less shame about that now. And I was able to change how libraries operate.
Yeah. And I think hopefully for a lot of people, their feminism is being updated to include things like respecting sex work as work. And I think we're seeing a lot more movement toward that these days, which is great. I mean, it's only better for everyone. Yay. Less shame, less dangerous work environments. That's a good thing. But
yeah, there's still a lot of work to do for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my story about something that was difficult, or maybe it's, your question asked about negative, and it was difficult. I don't think it was a negative thing,
no.
But it was challenging for sure.
Yeah, challenging. Yeah. All right, Tara, thanks for sharing that challenge with us. I really appreciate it. Let's talk about something exciting. What is your favorite thing about your field?
I mentioned this earlier, but I think for both diversity and inclusion and the work that we're doing to keep the internet healthy and open and accessible for all, I love that they're emergent problems. Like, no one has solved these.
Yeah.
They're not simple problems to solve. They're not easy problems to solve. And I love that as we're learning things, we can share both our successes and hopefully our failures in kind of that open ethos so that other people can learn and build on them as well. Like, I can't think of any country, industry, organization that has got diversity and inclusion totally down pat. So I think it works better when we can learn from each other and move towards a more equitable workplace and society faster.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe in open sourcing. All the EDI stuff that we do is just so important to just be like, we tried this thing. It went well. You try it. You know,
open sharing all the things.
Exactly. Yes. Are there any specific areas that you're really kind of like obsessed with right now or really focused on?
I mentioned too at the beginning, I'm really proud of the work that we've done at Mozilla around trans inclusion. That's an area I'm really passionate about. And about a year ago, I published some policy that would, initially it was just the places you would need to update your name and gender marker if you went through a gender transition. And then realizing the person transitioning also had teammates and a manager and people around who wanted to do the right thing. They were scared of saying the wrong thing and that they needed support as well. So the policy guidelines became a lot more robust, including information like what is gender, what is sex assigned at birth. And we worked with Trans Focus, an amazing organization here in Vancouver.
We had them on our podcast. They're amazing.
Oh, Drew Dennis, who is no longer with them, came and did a webinar at Mozilla, one for managers and one for individual contributors. And I looked at the stats. I think half the company has watched them. So Mozillians, that's people in the Mozilla community, are super smart, curious, and wanting to learn more and do better. So that was super encouraging.
That's amazing.
I'm also really passionate about accessibility because of my work background and I guess because of my values as well. So there's been small changes to the culture that I've been able to be a catalyst for. So we have a monthly meeting where it's kind of the most important transfer of information from our executives to the whole company. And I worked with our AV team to ensure that those meetings are live captioned.
Amazing. That's great.
And we went at our all hands last week. We had live captions on the plenary stage. So not only are people who are deaf or hard of hearing, it provides